We've traditionally outperformed the automotive industry and other vehicle industries over the last 10 years. Yes, we've got a huge sugar hit just at the moment, but we expect customers receiving a fantastic experience that we know they'll receive when they go out caravan camping, that we'll get a fair amount of stickability and we'll see a new foundation.
Hello and welcome along to the Camping Trade World podcast, or should I say g'day, because on today's episode we're going to be taking a closer look at the camping and caravanning market in Australia. To help give us the best and most up-to-date insight, I was delighted to welcome onto the podcast Stuart Lamont, who is the CEO of the Caravanning Industry Association of Australia. Stuart has been with the association and in the industry for many years, so there really is no better person to talk to about this topic. If you're interested in working with the Australian market, or you just want to listen to some great examples of how an association and an industry looks after its interests, then you're going to enjoy this one. Thanks a lot for listening, and don't forget to head over to www.campingtradeworld.com for all the latest news in the sector and the next issue of our digital magazine, which is launching very soon. Enjoy the podcast. Here's Stuart. Thank you very much for coming onto the podcast, Stuart. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. No problems.
So I thought maybe we could start off with perhaps you could just give us a little bit about your own background, your own personal background, how you ended up in the industry and how you ended up at the Caravan Industry Association of Australia.
David, probably a matter of circumstances. I've held senior management positions in a whole range of industries, from road construction through to plastics manufacturing, retail, event management, celebrity management. And we sold a business some 15 or 16 years ago and decided to travel the world. We've been avid travelers and so took a year off while we were able to and certainly were physical and mentally able to do the things that we wanted to do around the world. So at the back end of that, because of our celebrity management and event management background, Caravan Industry Association of Australia was running a conference and reached out to us and said, "Hey, do you want to help us out from a contract?" And that was 14 years ago, and I've never left. Through a matter of circumstances, took that role on and went through business development, and then 4 or 5 years ago, or 4 or 5 years later, ended up as the CEO and probably haven't left at that point. So, matter of circumstances, but, I've been a caravan camper all my life and love the industry and love travel. And so it's just a natural fit. And, it's not really a job, when you get to wake up and make a difference to an industry and a sector that you absolutely love.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say it does really make a difference when you work in an industry you love, for sure. So obviously it's kind of self-explanatory what the industry association does, but maybe you could just explain it, give a brief overview for the people who might not be aware of exactly what you do.
Australia is, set up in very defined states and territories, and we have a federal government. So, we have three tiers of government from where we sit. We're a federated body. We only have 10 members, being our very well-formed state caravanning associations, which deal with local issues on the ground, and they deal with their state-based governments. From a Caravan Industry Association of Australia perspective, we are the sole voice when it comes to anything federal. So anything that the federal government does, whether it's compliance, labour laws, insurance, compliance standards, and so forth. We have an input in relation to what that looks like. We have a very compartmentalised organisation, sort of the IKEA model. It's a bit of plug and play, but we do four main activities. First one of those is research, and we have developed a very strong research and insights team over the last 5 or 6 years. Now, that very much underpins everything we do from a marketing, compliance and advocacy perspective. We advocate on behalf of the industry, and we're very heavily involved in terms of talking to the federal government. We've got a federal election coming up next year, so very important to make sure that caravan and camping is front of mind, and we get not only what industry wants, but what our consumers want. And we only looked at Glasgow a couple of weeks ago, and the Australian government going over there and announcing a net zero carbon emission by 2050. We certainly very much on the back burner as far as our country is concerned, but we've got very large spaces to go, and we've got infrastructure needs that need to be start thinking about now, as opposed to to when those targets start to hit. So, you know, we're certainly already opening up conversation with the federal government in terms of how can we get electric infrastructure into caravan parks. You know, how can we have complete self-sustaining energy circuits, within our caravan parks in Australia. So that's our advocacy piece. From a compliance and accreditation perspective, we run a very in-depth accreditation program from a manufacturing perspective. We audit and inspect product at the manufacturing process, at consumer shows and retail dealerships. And we've seen a decline of compliance issues by about 40% in the last 3 years. So, we see that education audit type processes, while it doesn't have a stick, it's highly valued and has seen great outcomes for both industry and consumers. And then fourthly, quite unusually for for an industry association, we also market the industry. So we have a very strong consumer stimulus role. We've got a database of some 900,000 people that we regularly talk to that have an interest in caravan and camping. There's about 400,000 of those that we speak to more often than not and try and get them to either go and buy a product or use their product if they own it more often. And then it also allows us to survey the market and get a sentiment in terms of what our consumer needs are so that we can factor that into the rest of the business.
Okay. Well, that's a really comprehensive overview. Thank you. It's kind of hard not to talk about this, but I thought we could maybe just have a quick overview of COVID and how that has affected the industry in Australia over the last year and a bit. You got a quick summary of that?
Yeah, I think it's been a blessing and a curse. Yeah, with Australia as an island has locked itself off from the rest of the world. So, that has been quite an advantageous for our industry. We are a country of travellers. And so the inability to go overseas has meant that they've looked for domestic holiday options. And our other main competitor, being cruise, has also been offline. So, people have looked to substitute, and caravan and camping is very much part of the Australian psyche. When I was growing up, you would go to school, you would then take a technical trade or go to university, you would get married, you'd buy a house, you'd work in a job for 40 years, and then you would retire, buy a caravan, and spend the rest of your life travelling around Australia. So, it's very much fondly thought of in the Australian psyche. And so we had a great foundation as far as that was concerned. So, even notwithstanding, we've been arguably the most, locked down country in the world. And we have had a fair amount of inability to be able to even travel domestically. Yeah, we've seen, some caravan parks, never been better. Retails, and I know our vice chairman, for example, has been in the industry for over 30 years and he's never seen it as good as what it is at the moment. And so I think if you're close to a metropolitan city from a caravan park perspective, you're incredibly busy. We do have some businesses that have struggled. By and large, we're somewhat embarrassed when we go and have a conversation with tourism recovery forums that we are better than almost any other sector in the Australian economy from a tourism perspective anyway.
Okay, and you said it's been a blessing and a curse. What, have there been any challenges you've had to overcome or help your members overcome?
Yeah, look, the curse comes in a lot of our transit parks that, because Australia has such long distances, people haven't been able to travel, and so they haven't, they haven't had the custom that others have had. Certainly we've got labour issues in terms of, the government provided very substantial incentives to keep not only employees connected to their employers, but also to help people out through COVID. And so there was really a disincentive to work. And so while we had plenty of orders in the booking system, we didn't physically have the labour to allow that to get into the marketplace. COVID more broadly, has created supply chain challenges in terms of being able to get parts and also the global supply or global demand for our industry product has also created some issues, certainly in terms of getting dedicated RV parts into our product. And just from a general cash flow and trying to navigate the ever-changing health orders. and what that means. And when we have had some situations where COVID has gone into a manufacturing facility or a caravan park, what does that mean for guests, employees, and so forth. So just navigating that, the myriad of different regulatory changes that are happening quite often.
And then so outside of COVID, and maybe as we hopefully start to move kind of back to a vaguely normal world again, what, do you see this this boost in the caravanning industry continuing in Australia? Do you think that it's kind of, the seeds have been sown enough for it to have a good future?
I think we've traditionally outperformed the automotive industry and other vehicle industries over the last 10 years. So we've got a fantastic foundation already. We've got a huge sugar hit just at the moment, but we expect subject to the customers receiving a fantastic experience that we know they'll receive when they go out caravan camping, that we'll get a fair amount of stickability and we'll see a new foundation. So we're seeing very strong both mid and long term results out of new people coming in. It's seeing new young migrant individuals come into our industry who have never thought about it in the past, and so there's a whole new wave of consumers that have never been exposed to our industry in the past that we believe will continue moving forward. And we also think that international travel and cruise will still have a long tail when it comes to nervousness about travelling there. Uncertainty about travel insurance and what happens if you're sick if you go overseas. So we think domestic tourism will be strong for some time to come.
Yeah, I think that's a pattern of obviously a few other countries are seeing, is that slightly younger demographic coming into it, bringing forward their decision to buy one, like you were saying earlier. People buy them when they retire, but now they're actually thinking, oh, maybe we get one now, sort of thing. You said that you guys do a lot of like consumer facing marketing, so has the messaging around that sort of been about trying to sell the dream of caravanning as a long-term holiday option?
It's always been cheekily we've passed the comment that you go and buy an RV, and unlike a holiday abroad where you come back with a photograph and a credit card debt, you've actually got an asset sitting on your front lawn that you can use over and over and over again. You can share with your family and friends, and then when the time comes, you can either use that to upgrade or to liquidate, and you've got an asset which is largely holding its value. So that's a really important message that we have. With COVID and I wouldn't say cabin fever, because what we're encouraging people to do is go from apartments and houses and then spend more time in a smaller space with their loved ones. But it gives them access to some spectacular locations that are outdoor, and it's well valued, and it's considered to be safe and affordable. So all those messages resonate. And at a time when every other tourism association in particular has spent their entire focus on talking to the government about trying to get bailouts, while we've been involved in those conversations, we've actually been talking about the consumer and getting them, while they were locked down in a planning phase, and getting them excited about what's going to happen when they do come out of lockdown. And then as people lock down, we've been particularly stimulating at the end of the day to try and get them travelling and using product and getting rid of some of that pent-up demand. So we've been quite lucky in that respect, and no other tourism industry sector in our country has had that consistent message out to consumers over the period of COVID like we have.
Has there been like an increase in the number of campsites and campgrounds in Australia during that time, or not really?
Not really. We do have a very structured and regulatory framework, which makes it tough to develop, and it's quite expensive to develop new sites. What we are seeing is a lot of corporatisation in our industry over this time, particularly with interest rates being so cheap and the industry booming the way that it is. It's considered to be a safe option. It's built on land. It's cash and it's booming at the moment. So to be able to borrow 0 or 1% out in the marketplace and get returns which are double digit is quite attractive for institutional investors. So we're seeing a lot of our caravan parks being swallowed up into corporate groups. But unlike the fury that happened after the GFC, which I called the one-ply toilet paper phase, where people would invest in a caravan park but then strip money out of it, what we're seeing now is people are actually investing, and then further to the actual acquisition cost, they're spending money in terms of developing those sites, putting more sites in, putting more roofed accommodation, and trying to make the experience a whole lot more attractive to consumers. So we see that the industry is better for that. We are seeing alternative types like agritourism product and farm stays, national parks being developed as well. So look, it's a slow creep, but we still have everyone wanting to go to the same place at the same time. And so, yeah, we've got very different seasons around the country, and there's more than 100,000 sites every night that go unused. So our role is just to try and spread that load and get people to travel outside those peak periods.
That's interesting what you were saying there about the, you know, what people are expecting at campsites and stuff. Definitely noticed that in Europe, that the standards of what people expect at a campsite have increased, and that may be because of new people coming in as well.
But I think it's twofold, David, on that. One, you've got the traditional, you know, caravan and camper that doesn't want a lot of facilities and they just want clean amenities and a site. And there's plenty of opportunities, you know, around the country for that to occur. But, you know, a lot of families are also looking for, a ready-made creche or activities to keep the kids entertained, or they're expecting a standard of living that they have at home. And as just general standards increase, expectations from a holiday perspective have also increased as well. So we've had to respond to that.
Yeah. One of the trend we're seeing quite a lot over here in Europe is that people are, the types of camping units people are buying, definitely sort of veering away from towables and caravans, and really there's a massive boom here for camper vans and smaller. Is that a similar thing happening in Australia? Or
we don't see it the same, we traditionally have about well over 90% of our product is in caravans and tow products. We certainly have a lot of new families coming in, and we've got a lot of Chinese imports that are entering the market at the low end. So they're very affordable for a young family to get into. So the trend hasn't moved from a market share perspective in the camper van, but certainly they're getting a lot more profile and Instagram tags like van life have certainly glorified and glamorized a life on the road in a camper van. And certainly what COVID has taught us is that you don't need to work in an office, and with good internet connection, you can work anywhere you like. And so more and more young people are choosing to have that freedom and get a small camper van and go out and work on the road.
But caravans and towables remain the sort of mainstay for Australia. Yeah, well, it's curious. Yeah, I guess it's because you have a little bit more space over there. I don't know. But sometimes we've seen that like new campers have a little bit of intimidation about towing and that kind of thing. Is it?
Yeah, we have set up a number of videos and we're trying to establish towing courses to take away that fear factor. Certainly, technology is now improving to make those products safer and less intimidating. But we are generally an outdoors type of culture. We do at the end of the day like to play with our toys, and so as a result by and large a caravan probably holds less fear to an Australian as opposed to some of the other global markets that we compete with.
One thing that you guys at the association seem to do really well, from what I can see from the outside anyway, is sort of gathering and compiling data about the industry. Obviously in more normal times it's useful for government lobbying and that kind of thing. Obviously at the minute everything's is going pretty great, but is that something that you use as a tool, that gathering data to sort of show the strength of the industry?
I think if we went back 5 or 6 years ago, we had no data on the industry whatsoever except for a little bit of ad hoc that was floating around. So it was a deliberate decision to make sure that not only the internal decisions that we made were evidence-based, but also in terms of our ability to run PR, to run our government advocacy, and to tell a story, we needed a really strong narrative that was based on research and insights. And so as we've developed that, we've found that industry has demanded more and more, and we've also found that the more we look, the more we find. And so that research and insights team is growing to quite a resource that's available, and arguably we've got more research than people know what to do with, which is a good thing.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and that data is obviously nationwide, but it's also drilled down to kind of a state level as well?
Can be drilled down from a tourism perspective. And the latest thing that we're doing, for example, is measuring RV deaths and causes of that. So then we can look at a policy argument around, how do we make RVs safer for consumers? How do we get them home safely after their caravanning trip? Is it a need for improved education or road infrastructure? Or as we mentioned earlier, more emphasis on towing courses. So if we can improve the road infrastructure, we can improve driver education, we can improve the standard of the vehicles themselves, we'll get a better industry as a result.
Do you get a lot of input from your members and from like manufacturers and things like that on those kind of projects?
Yeah, we run a number of forums. We run very tight as far as our manufacturers are concerned. We get strong feedback out of the insurance company, through warranty repairs, and then from consumers themselves as well. So we've got what we have been able to do is also raise the profile of the industry amongst, I guess, some government departments. So, they're also collecting industry data on our behalf now, which never previously occurred.
Okay. We may have already covered a few of these things anyway, but I was going to ask you what you think the biggest opportunity is for the industry at the moment and also the biggest challenge.
Yeah, I think the biggest opportunity we have at the moment is these new markets and those people that have, through COVID, being forced or encouraged to look at alternatives. We're a large country with some of the most spectacular locations in the world, and campsites invariably are located and dotted around the country in some of the most spectacular places that you would ever want to visit. So nature, affordable, it's certainly accessible as far as the community is concerned, and we've got a economy which is wakening up and wanting to do things. So we do have what we consider to be a very long tail and a great opportunity for foundation for what the future looks like. In terms of challenges, I think we covered a little bit earlier. Certainly labour and supply is a challenge at the moment, like it is around the world. We will see also that once cruise and international open up, there'll be an awful lot of marketing dollars spent to try and encourage those back to those sectors. So we will have a fight on our hands to make sure that we keep the people that we have encouraged to migrate across. By and large, I think the opportunities far outweigh in terms of the challenges that we have at the moment. And from a challenges perspective, some of them you can control and some of them you can have an element of influence over. So we're just trying to pick and choose in terms of those battles and see what we can do in terms of making the industry a better place.
Yeah, definitely. On the manufacturing subject, I guess obviously a lot of the product there is made in Australia, but it's the actual sourcing of the raw materials that's the issue, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we've always had a very strong Australian manufacturing industry, and with the departure of the automotive industry out of Australia, we are now the largest automotive vehicle manufacturing industry left in Australia. We have the largest concentration of caravan manufacturers in the world, in the northern suburbs of Melbourne. We've got some nearly 250 manufacturers, small businesses that are supplying campers and caravans, trailers, camper vans, and so relative to what happens in the rest of the world, it's quite segmented as far as that's concerned. But we are also seeing with the free trade agreement that we have with China, a growing push from Chinese products to get into the country, and we will see 100% growth in that market this year. They'll grow this year to about 40% of the total market. And that's born about the inability to supply people wanting product now at an affordable price. And so some of those imports, while the local manufacturing remains strong, probably have set a new foundation as well for those types of products as well.
All right, so I was just going to move us on into the future slightly now, so 2022. How do you think that will be for the industry as a whole?
Oh, look, I think if demand continues the way that it is, I mean, you'd expect a massive 22. What we have for manufacturers is a number of regulatory changes, however. So the largest regulatory change for the manufacturing industry in the last 30 years is about to take effect on the 1st of July next year. That will clean a lot of our industry up. It'll make them more accountable to the government. They'll have to move from a self-certification process to a to a type approval, which means there'll be a lot more, scrutiny on the product that they produce. We've got very harsh consumer laws that, continue to be tinkered with. We've got a lot of small business operators who, through supply challenges, maybe putting domestic parts and substituting in terms of parts to get the product out there at the moment. So, we do have, a little bit of a consumer, bubble that we'll need to manage. But in terms of demand, we've got order books in some cases for bespoke product that's out 18 months. Our lead times and our order books are all chock-a-block at the moment. Our mainstream manufacturers, while they're frantically catching up, certainly well and truly selling into 2022. So, we've got, even if there wasn't another order to come into the system, in the next 6 to 8 weeks, we've still got plenty to go on with.
Yeah. Absolutely. And also just on the subject of 2022, I noticed you guys have got the 30th National Conference, which is the 28th of March to the 1st of April, Gold Coast.
28th of March to the 1st of April. It's the largest gathering from an education perspective, a networking perspective for the Australian caravanning industry. We'll look to bring back a lot of people who have been instrumental in our growth over the last 30 years. But importantly, with COVID and coming on the back of that, the industry hasn't been able to meet. So, this will be the first opportunity in a social environment where the industry can come together. And, Australians are well known, they've great, like England, a great drinking culture. And you don't really need an excuse to come together and have a pint.
Very true.
And this will be one of the first opportunities for the industry to come together. So, we're expecting probably over 1,000 people in terms of coming to that particular event and network and share ideas and look to the future as to what that looks like.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. Yeah, we attended the Caravan Salon show in Dusseldorf this summer just gone. It was kind of the same thing, like the first time that we'd all been back together again in person, and it was nice. Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, it was very frustrating not being able to get over to Dusseldorf this year, but we're certainly hopeful for this year.
Yeah, for sure. So as well as obviously that niceness, there'll be kind of like seminars and that kind of thing going on in the.
Yeah, we have very strong educational program.
Yeah,
we have a number of workshops and masterclasses. We have a very strong supplier trade exhibition. Plenty of great social events. So it's pretty much a week-long of activities where everyone can come together and hopefully by the end of it learn a little bit and reconnect with some of their old colleagues and friends.
Yeah, sounds great. Okay, well, I've got one kind of final question for you. So if you could change one thing about the industry, what would it be and why?
Look, I think we still have a lot of maturing to do. As an industry, we are still very fractured. We've got a lot of small businesses. We are growing, getting more corporate thinking into it. But the industry is ultimately, dependent upon consumers' confidence in dealing with the industry. And so, our ability to respond to consumer needs, to work them through proper handovers. To eliminate at the end of the day silly things that shouldn't occur, and to take a more customer focused mentality. If we could improve that, I think that will improve and ultimately end up with greater stickability. Our reputation will improve, and if that means that we have to unfortunately lose some industry players, who are not keeping up to those consumer demands, or don't have the volume to be able to manage, what the customer expects and what government and society expects, that might not necessarily be a bad thing. And we've seen consolidation and grouping in Europe and America, and seen the industry come out of it better and stronger as a result of that. And we're yet to do that. So if we could certainly mature as an industry, take a more customer focused thing, and certainly weed out some of the rogues or those guys that the industry sort of passed them by. That would be what we're certainly trying to hope for.
Well, it sounds like you're
sounds hard for an industry association saying that we want less members, but
no, I understand what you mean. I think yeah, and it sounds like you're on the right track. Sounds like you've got a great game plan for the future of the industry there. So yeah, great.
We're trying.